Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the NoSillaCast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever-so-slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, February 20th, 2011, and this is show number 300. Woohoo! Man, the chat room is packed tonight. There's standing room only. Pat had to sit at the back. It's crazy in there. It's finally here. I got to tell you, when I first started the show, for probably the first couple of years, I felt pretty much on my own. It required all of my energy to keep the ball rolling, every week coming up with new ideas. Nowadays, I feel like the NoSilla Castaways have made this into a life form of its own. People send in fantastic reviews, they write in questions that I really enjoy answering, dumb or otherwise. They suggest products for me to review, they do chit-chat across the pond with me so I don't have to think up stuff to talk about for the second half of the show. The NoSilla Castaways in the live chat are so dear to me. They entertain each other, they care about each other, they debate a wide variety of topics, and sometimes even lean over and listen to me jabber on the show. I also never realized what a big part of the show Steve would become. He started by just, you know, he was supporting me, you know, buying me gadgets and making sure I had time to get the show done. But now it's gone up a real level from there. His work creating videos, doing recordings, and supporting the NoSilla Castaways in the live chat makes him a huge part of the show, too. I also never take for granted the international family that we have here, from Singapore, New Zealand, Australia, Peru, England, Ireland, Belgium, and that's just the top couple of countries I can remember. It seems like the NoSilla Cast has grown into something none of us could have ever predicted. I thank all of you for your support in creating the show and bringing such joy to me. Now, I swear to you, I wrote that introduction before I heard the following recording from Steve. I had not read my intro to him before he did his recording. The similarities are practically spooky.
Hi, Allison. This is Steve. I'd like to congratulate you on your 300th episode of the NoSilla Cast. What an achievement. You know, from a bowling perspective, 300 is a perfect score. And baby, you've been rolling strikes all the way with what I think is the perfect podcast. Now, the movie 300 only gets 7.8 out of 10 stars on IMDb, but you get 10 on my scale. And when it comes to rants, you make Leonidas look like a pussycat. Okay, enough with the 300 analogies. Seriously, it's really been fun watching you grow with your show over the years. What a difference from the moment you first picked up a mic and uttered the words.
Hi, this is Allison Sheridan, and welcome to the NoSilla Podcast, or NoSillaCast for short.
Now, there are several aspects of your show I particularly enjoy, but what I love most about the NoSilla Cast is how much enjoyment it gives you. Considering you put in about 10 hours for each episode, you've dedicated over 3,000 hours of your life to the show. And from what I can see, it's been worth every minute. I think one of the items that makes your show a bit different from the others is your focus on community. There's a strong sense of interaction with your listeners on the NoSilla Cast. Your early episodes involved a lot of Allison talking into the mic. Don't get me wrong, I enjoy hearing your views and reviews on Apple and other products, but your show has evolved to the point where now much of it is based on input from other contributors and on interviews you have with some pretty interesting people. Nothing embodies your community more than the NoSilla Castaways who join us in the chat room every Sunday night at 5 p.m. Pacific during your live show. It's there that you can see the heart of the NoSilla Cast community. I think they joined the show partly to see the NoSilla Cast be produced, but as much or more to enjoy the company of each other. It is clear they care about one another and are there to provide support and encouragement to those who need it. If I may draw an analogy, the NoSilla Cast is sort of like a perpetual motion machine, but this one works where you give to the community and they give back to you, which keeps you going even more. I think it's your enjoyment of that feedback loop that makes the NoSilla Cast special. I must mention Bart here. The emotion you showed when you first listened to Bart's well wishes for your 300th show was very touching. Even though I know you and Bart talk and chat with each other all the time, I could see how much you miss interacting with him on your show. Although I have to say it has been interesting and fun to hear other people contribute to chit-chat across the pond, or whatever body of water or geographical feature of the week is, we all very much want Bart to get well and be back on your show with vim and vigor. But I'm guessing probably not as much as he does. So, Allison, keep up the podcasting, and please know, on this 300th show, I'm with you all the way on to the next 300 episodes and beyond. I know it'll be a fun ride, and I'll be sure to stay subscribed.
Oh, Steve, that's so nice. I really, really appreciate that. And you've definitely characterized all of the different aspects of the show with especially the Nocilla Castaways. So I had not heard that before I wrote what I wrote. And we clearly look at things a lot the same way. And now you know how easy it is for me to do the show because I have support from someone like him. We will be hearing from Bart before the show is over. So you'll hear what he was talking about there. Well, we have a great show this week filled with well-wishers and weirdos who sent in audio recordings to commemorate the occasion. I think we should start it with a couple of the normal well-wishers right now. We'll save some of the weirdos for later.
Hi, this is Katie Floyd, and this is the NoCillaCast podcast, a technology geek podcast with an ever-so-slight Macintosh bias. Happy 300, Allison.
Hi, this is Victor Cahiao, and this is the Mozilla Cast Podcast, a technology geek podcast
with an ever
so slight Macintosh
bias.
Ellison, congratulations to you on 300. Unbelievable, and you are such an attribute to the community in that you provide this friendly atmosphere where people just gravitate to everything you have to say. So, congratulations, and keep on answering those
dumb questions.
Well, thanks, Katie and Victor. Both of you have been such great friends over the years. To the audience, if you ever wonder who I go to for help, and tech help in particular, Katie and Victor are at the top of the list.
Hi, Allison, Steve, and the Nocilla Castaways. This is Barry wishing everyone a happy 300th episode. Congratulations.
Well, that was Barry Falk, and I got to tell you, Barry is the nicest guy in the world. He drives everyone around at Blogworld and Macworld. He's so generous with his time. He takes people to the mothership. He's just, I'm telling you, he's the nicest guy in the world. Thanks for calling in, Barry. Well, I wanted to make a quick tech update here. Last week, Jane did a review of GFX card status, and I mentioned that I was really excited about it, but it would freak me out every time I would unplug my power and the screen would flash from big blue flash when it switched graphics cards. Not exactly sure what was happening. Evidently, that was some kind of weird effect from being connected to my external monitor, maybe, because all of the time since then that I've plugged or unplugged power, I just get a simple little growl notification that the graphics card has been swapped from integrated to discrete or vice versa. One last time, you can find GFX card status at CodyKrieger.com. Let's have a listen to the recording that Kirshan sent in.
Hello. You've reached the 300th episode of the NoCillaCast podcast, a technology geek podcast with an ever-so-slight Macintosh bias. Hi, Allison. This is Kirshan from FreeRangeCoder.com, congratulating you on your 300th podcast. Here's to many more.
Yay! Thanks, Kirshan. That was fun. You've become a big part of the show lately, and I'm sure glad you've joined us.
Dumb.
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 Dumb questions.
Dumb questions. Dumb questions.
What do I? What is?
How come I always have to?
It's time for Dumb Question Corner.
Well, Ken Wolf sent in a dumb question from his pal, Professor Albert, that is, well, rather unusual.
Hi, Allison. This is Ken Wolf from Manhattan Repertory Theater in New York City. Now, a number of podcasts ago, you had a gentleman on from New Zealand, and you said you loved a man with an accent. Well, my dear comrade, Professor Albert was listening to the podcast with me, and he went crazy, and he's been begging me if he could contact you with a dumb question, because he thinks you are amazing. So here he is.
Hello there, Allison. Oh, this is Professor Albert. Oh, you are the Mac Madonna, the most wonderful, beautiful podcast in the world. Oh, I love your podcast. You are the very, very best, most beautiful podcasting woman in the world. Lord, you are very, very special. Oh, my God. Anyway, I have a dumb question here. What the heck is a tilde? Someone said, type the tilde in. I said, tilde? What the heck is a tilde? I know Tilda Swinton, the actress, but what the heck is a tilde? Can you help me out here and tell me what is a tilde and what the heck does it do? Thank you. You are very wonderful.
Well, Professor, I am delighted that you enjoy the show so much. Your exuberance is very endearing. How could I not answer your question? The tilde is the little squiggly line above the tab key on the left side. At least on the Mac keyboards, that's where it is. I think it's around there on the PC keyboards as well. In computing, specifically in Unix-like operating systems, using the tilde is a short way of saying your home directory. So if I want you to look in your home directory's library folder, I'd tell you to look in /library. I would use the tilde because I don't know the name of your home folder. For all I know, your home directory could be called Ken, Ken Wolf, Prof Al, or even Dancing Bunnies. How am I supposed to know? So if I'm writing instructions to you, I'd have a hard time describing it to you. So using that little tilde is efficient and clear, as long as you know what the tilde is. Turns out you can actually use the tilde in the terminal as part of commands to mean your home directory name. So let's say you're buried down in dancingbunnies/library/preferences, and you want to navigate back up to the home directory. You could navigate back up by using the cd or change directory command thusly, cd space tilde. So as a way of describing someone's home directory or actually navigating to your home directory, we use the tilde key. Make sense, Professor? And I'm flattered at all your praise. All right, it's time to work in some weirdos, like Professor Al was normal, but let's get started with them.
Hi, Guy. Did you know that Al is close to 300?
Alice in Wonderland was written nearly 300 years ago?
No, Guy. Allison from the NoSilicast.
Okay, wait. Her name's Allison and she lives in NoSilicast? Who'd have thunk it? I'm sure she chased a rabbit down to Wonderland.
No, Guy. Allison Sheridan. And she lives over at podfeet.com. Gee, it's like banging my head against a drum.
Tweedledee and Tweedledum. Yep, I remember them.
How did we get here?
Now let's have a chit-chat across the pond about this.
Ah, what, with an ever-so-Belgian bias?
Oh, where are we waxing with this?
Well, I could do you a screen steps tutorial if you like.
Do you think Honda Bob uses screen steps to fix your car?
Oh, I'm sure of it.
Seriously, Allison, congratulations on reaching 300 podcasts from all of us at the MyMac.com podcast.
And I'm sure that Kelly and Eric, who I know your podcast is dedicated to, would be very proud of you.
Cheers.
Cheers. Woots.
Etc.
I don't think we were supposed to read that.
Well, yeah, but we did.
Uh-oh.
Thanks so much, guys. You rock. And I hope Kelly and Eric are proud. I think they would have been my biggest supporters. It's very sweet of you to remember their influence on the show. So George from Tulsa is a real dear, and he's been such a great friend of the show in so many ways. I never know what we're going to get when he sends something along, and this week is no different. This week he sent in a video he created that you can watch over at podfeet.com and the audio for me to play for you right here. And yes, he does fall into the weirdo pile. He needs no more introduction. Let's give a listen.
Isn't this a better place to meet than the Brimstone Bar?
No question. Nothing in hell burns as bright as the corporate soul. Have you figured out what to do about that potfoot woman?
We have a plan, but it isn't so easy to explain.
Get started. Master wants me to start a plague in India.
Remember when we thought she would just pod fade?
But she's about to do episode 300.
I had all her recorded episodes run through the comparative relationship analytic profiler.
Crap. What did it tell you?
Most of her motto phrase proved 100% truthful. It is a technology geek podcast with a Macintosh bias. But there's not much, ever so slight, about that Macintosh bias. About the only good things she says about the master's operating system is that she loves Excel pivot tables and prefers how she can move and resize on screen windows.
One of the master's better inventions, pivot tables. Those, and PowerPoint.
Oh, she loathes PowerPoint. Her love of pivot tables just adds a veneer of credibility to her obvious Mac bias.
Too bad about PowerPoint. The master says more human time and energy has been wasted by PowerPoint than even by Angry Birds and Windows reboots combined.
You know the master uses pivot tables.
Right. But strapping poor souls to pivot tables then rotating them 90 degrees is a different kind of torture than using Excel.
True, so bloody true.
So tell me about that plan you mentioned.
Righto. It's already working. Remember that singer we offered another chance upstairs if he would work for us at Apple?
You mean the guy who invented the blue screen of death?
One and the same. He's embedded at Apple headquarters in Cupertino, and making great progress.
What's he done?
For one thing, he invented the application store, and Apple is now erratically reviewing applications for both its computers and mobile devices, driving developers nuts. Then it charges developers 30% when an application is admitted into the App Store. Just last week, he used that model to demand 30% from any content played on Apple devices, even if the content is purchased at other stores, like Amazon or Sony.
Ah, arrogance and greed. So how's that going to help us with the Sheridan woman?
She's only important as long as people believe in Apple. As arrogance and greed destroy Apple, she will be neutralized.
Excellent. Anything else on the agenda?
Yes, just one thing. We've hit a setback at Google.
How could it be? We had them in the bag.
Things change. Remember those guys who invented the Don't Be Evil motto? They are back. We'll need a new plan there.
The master will not be pleased.
I know, but he's just sewn up Nokia, so he's in as good a mood as I've seen him since the Inquisition.
I guess it is time to face the music.
Well, George, as usual, that was completely different. You guys should go back and watch the video. It's pretty funny with the video, too. Definitely different. Thanks for the entertainment. Well, let's clean our palate with a contribution from Japan. David Bogdan sent in a very short message in Japanese, so let's listen very closely.
Hello, this is David in Japan. 300回目のポッドキャストおめでとうございます。
Well, I don't know what you said, David, but it sure sounded cool.
Hi, this is Michelle from New York, and this is the NoSillaCast podcast, a technology geek podcast with an ever-so-slight Macintosh bias.
Hi, this is Chris Eschweiler from chrisesch.com, and this is the NoSillaCast podcast, a technology geek podcast with an ever-so-slight Macintosh bias.
Hi, this is Paul, the English guy that lives in Switzerland. And this is the NoSillaCast podcast, a technology geek podcast with an ever-so-slight Macintosh bias.
Well, thanks so much, Michelle and Chris and Paul. I love all the different renditions. Now, to prove that my bias is only ever so slight.
Hey, this is Mr. Gadgets, and even though I have a Linux bias, whether I'm on the road or here in Kansas City, out blazing the trails at the technological frontier, I've got an ever so huge bias to listen to Allison Sheridan and the NoSillaCast. Congratulations, Allison, on 300 shows, and let's have 300 more.
300 more? Jeez, Bruce, I'm exhausted. Oh, heck, let's go ahead and do 300 more. Anyway, I love that we have friends from all technologies. I do wish I knew more Linux. It's really fun to dabble, but I'm just not good at it yet. You know, Neelix keeps trying to teach me stuff, and I'm getting there, but I'm not that great at it yet. Well, next up, I'd like to welcome a new sponsor to the show, Smile from SmileSoftware.com. This is going to be so easy to do ads for these guys because I am positively addicted to Text Expander. But wait, what problem does it solve? Do you write anything repetitively? Do you sign your name to emails? Do you write the name of your company? Do you give people your email address or phone number? Do you answer the same question over and over and over again? Do you start every email with the same introduction every time? Well, I got to tell you, quit wasting time typing all that stuff out and use Text Expander instead. All you do is assign a snippet of text to expand into the full phrase. Over the coming weeks, I'm going to give you examples that might help you realize how much time you could save using Text Expander. Heck, I even have a snippet for writing Text Expander. I type T, E, and a semicolon, and it expands automatically and makes a fun little sound. I use the semicolon because I don't know what a semicolon is for, so I know I'm never going to use it in real typing. You can find Text Expander at SmileSoftware.com, and for the next month, if you use the coupon code NoSillaCast211, that's all capital letters, NoSillaCast211, you'll get 20% off the purchase price of most of the fine products from Smile. The coupon is only good until March 15th, 2011, so get it while the pricing is good. Let's hear some more from our well-wishers.
Hi, this is Lola from Nowhere in Particular, and this is the NoSillaCast podcast, a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias. Ever! Did you like that? Yeah? Yeah. Congratulations, Allison, and by proxy, Steve, on the 300th episode of the NosillaCast. You've done an amazing 299 shows and built up such a wonderful NosillaCast community. I'm looking forward to 300 more. Take care and stay gold.
Lola, I think you really nailed the ever part of that. That's for sure. Thanks so much for the well wishes, and I'll do my best to do another 300 shows.
Well, hello, Allison, and all the NosillaCast castaways. This is Dr. Carter of the Tech Doctor podcast. Congratulations on reaching that milestone of show number 300. How cool is that? I look forward to your show every week and always enjoy it during my Monday lunchtime. Wow, 300. What an accomplishment. Allison, one of the things that I really appreciate about you is how you tirelessly advocate for those of us who are part of the disability community. Thank you so much for making us a part of your podcast and for always encouraging developers to make software accessible. Happy 300. Hope somebody does bake that cake. Until next time, so long from the Tech Doctor.
Thanks, Robert. You know, it's so easy to be inclusive, and almost seems like it'd be harder to shut people out. I've gained so much from all of you guiding us sightlings along to understand what your world is like and what amazing things you all accomplish. In an act of irony, you've opened our eyes. And by the way, Steve brought me a 300th anniversary cake in the beginning of the show. If you go back and watch the live show video, you can actually see it.
Hi, this is Greg from Blue Mango, and this is the Nosilla Podcast, a technology geek podcast with an Evernote slightly... No. Okay, hold on. The Nosilla Podcast, a technology geek podcast with a never say never... This is the Nosilla Podcast, a technology geek podcast with an everlasting slightly Macintosh bias. Ever. Hi, this is Greg from Blue Mango, and this is the Nosilla Podcast, a technology geek podcast with ever so slightly who's Macintosh biased.
Poor Greg, he does try. It's a good thing he's a terrific program and marketer. If ScreenSteps depended on his audio recording and memory talents, we'd all be in trouble. He didn't even get the name of my show right. But speaking of ScreenSteps, last week I talked about a cool new free service called ScreenSteps.me. The idea is that after you make a cool lesson for someone, you really might want a place to put it online so you could link to it in a message board or an email instead of having someone to download an attachment. Well, Kirshen saw this immediately, how she could use that in her blog. She wrote a post over at freerangecoder.com where she described her discovery of how to enter the Apple command key into text. The instructions themselves would have cluttered up her clean blog look, so she put them on screensteps.me and simply linked over to them. I put a link in the show notes to Kirshen's screensteps.me page so you can see how good it looks. All Kirshen had to do to make that happen was sign up for a free account and then click the share button in ScreenSteps. If you'd like to give ScreenSteps a free 30-day trial, check it out over at screensteps.com. And don't forget my coupon code NOSILLA, that's my name spelled backwards in all capital letters, for 25% off the purchase price of ScreenSteps Desktop, Standard, or Pro. Now, the next recording I was frightened to play. It's from the MacCrack lads, David and Justin. They've been known to step over the line for a family-friendly podcast, but I pre-screened this, and I promise it's safe.
Hi, this is David Shortle.
Hey, Dave, it's Justin here.
Oh, Justin, how's it going? What's the story?
You know, your old buddy Justin from MacCrack.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, I know who you are.
How are things?
I'm okay.
Good. I was just ringing to let you know that, do you realize it's the NosillaCast's 300th show this week?
Who are they when they're at home?
Allison, you know, NosillaCast, a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias.
You nearly busted your vocal cord saying that.
I think I nearly busted something. it's the 300th show this week, and I thought we might just have to get together to put in our say and say, you know, well done, Allison. It's been fantastic. A woman who's been so hospitable to us when we were over there, and so nice when she was over here with her husband Steve last summer. I thought, you know, time for us to pay our dues and say, you know, thanks for all the support and help when we were out there, and the help with podcasting on Podcasting Show and getting us started by listening to that. And a happy 300.
A happy 300 indeed, Allison. And as long as, you know, Taco Thursday is always around, I'd say NosillaCast will always rock.
Absolutely. And Steve, you're a saint. Happy NoSillaCast.
See, they behaved. But hey, wait a minute, guys. What do you mean Steve's a saint? I'm awesome to live with. Can you imagine? I'm just the nicest person. It's perfect. Anyway, you know, I didn't know that you guys learn from podcasting on podcasting. I don't think you've ever told me that before, or my memory failed me yet again. Now, I guess there's are those who would blame me for what you guys do as a result. I'll have to think about that. Well, show number 300 would not be complete without a recording from the first officer of the NoSilla Castaways.
G'day, girls and boys. It's Rose from Hobart, reporting for NoSillaCast from across a rather large pond. Which pond? It's called the Pacific Ocean, and it takes approximately 10 hours to fly across. How do I know that? Because of the good mates I've made by being a part of the NoSillaCast, I fly to San Francisco every year to hang out with them for a few days. Okay, it's only been 2 years so far, but I hope to do many more. So you could say NoSillaCast cost me thousands of dollars. What do I get for that money? I get something priceless. I get a community. A community that informs me, entertains me, helps me break laws by letting a foreigner buy stuff with their credit card, lends me their MiFi so I can be hyper-connected at all times. A community that nurtures me. Happy 300th episode, NoSillaCast. May there be many more. I've just had a sudden thought. There may be people listening for the first time, having found NoSillaCast by mindlessly noodling around on the internet, as one does. What a happy accident for them. But it occurs to me, they may not know what NoSillaCast is. Well, it's a podcast. What kind of podcast, I hear you ask? It's a podcast with an ever-so-slight Macintosh bias.
Well, I think Rose put it best. She explained what the community here is all about. It's a warm, fuzzy feeling you get by being a NoSilla castaway, and at the same time, it costs you a lot of money buying tech toys and traveling. All right, let's keep going and hear from yet another lovely lady in Australia.
Hi, Alison. It's Jane in Perth, just sitting outside on a lovely, warm, sunny evening. And it's Sunday evening, the day before your 300th episode. Well, the day before here in Australia, of course, because where you are, it's yesterday. Or is that tomorrow? Or maybe it was the day before. Anyway, happy 300th, and here's to many, many more episodes of the NoSillaCast podcast. Cheers, Alison.
Now, you would think that I planned this by going around the globe in some sort of order, but trust me, I didn't. In any case, I would like to now move us over to New Zealand.
Hi, this is Alistair from Wellington, New Zealand, and this is the NoSillaCast podcast, a technology geek podcast with an ever-so-slight Macintosh bias. Well, congratulations, Alison, on reaching yet another amazing milestone, 300 shows. I'm sure there'll be many hundreds more to come. You tweeted recently after Macworld that one of the most unexpected results from podcasting was all the friends that you'd made. Well, please understand that in addition to you making friends, we've all made friends too, not only with yourself and Steve and Bart, but also with each other through the chat room and indeed on Twitter and even Facebook. I've certainly found many people with shared interests through your audience, and we now have great conversations without needing to involve you. Sorry about that. But anyway, keep up the good work. It's a great show, and that shows from the massive, massive participation you've had in recent months since Bart has been unfortunately under the weather. It's been a great time, and I've enjoyed listening to all of the contributors and even enjoyed being one myself. So it's kind of a mixed blessing, really. It's been a great direction for the show to go, but at the same time, we all miss Bart. So I'm sure I join with everybody when we wish Bart a speedy recovery and hope that he soon returns to the best technology geek podcast with an ever-so-slight Macintosh bias on the planet.
Thanks, Alistair. That was fantastic. Well, now it's time for our second-to-last recording. This one is from Nightwise in Belgium. I must warn you that, as he has wont to do, he goes off the rails while he's talking here. In the middle, you'll think he's lost what little mind he had to start with. But trust me, he brings it all together, and it is simply wonderful.
Hello, Alison. Nightwise calling.
to congratulate you on your 300 shows and to bring you exciting news. We have acquired some top secret information. Using nothing more than my good looks and my charm, of course, we have been able to acquire the script of the next Transformer movie. And I'm not talking about Transformers 3, because, you know, we all seen the prequels to that. You know, they go to the moon and there's a Transformer there and stuff like that. No, we have gotten the script of Transformers 4. Yes, indeed, Michael Bay's fourth movie in this epic robot war series, Transformers. Yes, we have acquired the script. Now, what does that mean for Nocilla Castaways? Absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. Completely out of the point. There's no problem to be solved. There is no Mac connection. There's no ever such like making Dutch bias. Well, perhaps there is. Because, well, let me just, you know, look at the script here. So Transformers 4 takes place in a not so distant future. But the, you know, the reality that we have known to love from the Autobots and the Decepticons and all of the favorite characters from the Transformer movies has completely changed. Spike Witwicky, dead. Mom and Dad Witwicky, dead. Hot Witwicky girlfriend, no longer in the movie because she wanted to stalk me outside my bedroom window instead. The Autobots, nearly completely destroyed. The Decepticons on the very edge of victory and complete dominance of the planet Earth. What has gone wrong? If we browse through the script, we see that the Autobots have suffered massive losses. Due to a, well, administrative oversight, the Decepticons have gotten a tactical advantage on the Autobots. Every time one of the Autobots had to leave the Ark to go out for maintenance, the Decepticons used that exact moment to strike at the garage. Yes, all of our favorite Autobot heroes, Ironhide, Bumblebee, and Jazz, you know, they just had to leave the Ark for maintenance because they had to have their oil changed or their spark plugs fixed or they had to take a new tire or something. Well, they drove to the garage and while they got hoisted up and had to wait for the mechanic to finish, well, the Decepticons flew in and took out the garage. This happened every single time one of the Autobots had to go to maintenance. They could do nothing else, just sit there, waiting, completely helpless, and of course, completely vulnerable to the evil Decepticon attack. And then, when all hope is almost lost, when Megatron is ready to plump his iron behind down on the top of the White House, things change. The Autobots get a new hero, somebody who will save them from these dastardly Decepticon attacks, somebody who will be able to fix the Autobots in the safety and luxury of their own home base. Yes, that hero is Honda Bob. Honda Bob, the magic mechanic who drives over to the Ark and fixes all the Autobots in seclusion and protection of this massive Autobot base. The Decepticons are completely powerless because as the Autobots are just hanging out in the Ark, you know, playing arcade games on Teletran, Honda Bob is fixing their warriors and there's nothing the Decepticons can do about it. It is an amazing story, and it goes even further. At one point, the Decepticons ambush Honda Bob. They rear-end him on the road and try to take him out. But Honda Bob is fearless. He turns around, and he takes a look at the giant, towering, evil Decepticon and uses his most evil weapon. Honda Bob tells a bad joke. It's an amazing scene, and an amazing scene. The Decepticon bursts apart at the seams, his logic center unable to process this incredibly terrible form of humor. The Decepticon explodes, and Honda Bob walks away, a cloud and fireball behind him, knowing that his bad joke has just about done in another con. It's an amazing story. So, if you are a robotic, army leader like Optimus Prime and you need to get maintenance done on your Autobots, why not call Honda Bob? Did your ark crash in the L.A. or Orange County area? Call Honda Bob. He'll drive right over to your submerged secret alien starship and fix your robots in the comfort of your own home. No more tactical surgical strikes by your enemies. No, just the luxury of having Honda Bob in your alien starship, fixing your alien robot warriors. What more do you want? So, if your robot transforms into a Honda or an Acura, why not give Honda Bob a call? He'll come right down and fix your Autobot. So, Honda Bob is not affiliated with Honda, Acura, the evil Decepticons, or Honda Worldwide. So, if you're a bot with a kind of a, you know, breaking spot, why don't you call Honda Bob? That and more will be in Transformers 4, Michael Bay's new awesome movie, The Revenge of Honda Bob.
Well, don't say I didn't warn you. I told you it goes off the rails. The chat room was very interested in how long he would go on along that topic. That was fun to watch. Anyway, so now Honda Bob isn't just locally known. He isn't just internationally known. He isn't just intergalactically known. He's a superhero, too. You gotta love it. Well, I decided to save Bart for the very end. Let's listen to what he has to say.
Hi, this is Bart Bouchotz from the NoSillaCast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever-so-slight Macintosh bias. Ever-so-slight? Ever-so-slight? Really? Slight bias in this show towards Macintosh? I guess the art of understatement is alive and well. I'm sorry I haven't been here to talk to you guys at all the last while. Unfortunately, I've been somewhat unwell. Still not actually over all that, but I figured it would be worth blowing the dust off my mic for a 300th show. No, I'm serious. I blew the dust off my mic to record this. Congratulations to Alison for making it to 300. Thank you very much to everyone for all of your well wishes. I don't particularly want to go into too much medical detail, but basically there's something in my sinuses that is making them very unhappy, and as a result I'm getting a lot of chest infections and fatigue and generally feeling pretty rotten. I'm seeing quite a few specialists now, and I have lots of lovely tests to do where they're going to send a camera crew up my nose all the way down into my chest and stuff. So there's progress, and hopefully I'll be back with you all soon. Anyway, until then, happy computing.
Well, as Steve said at the beginning of the show, I held my hand in my heart when I heard his voice on that recording. I miss him so much. I know, I talk to him from time to time. We've even done FaceTimes to goof around, and that's fantastic. But somehow hearing him on a recording really got to me, really made me remember what I'm missing every single week. I'm glad he checked in, and I'm glad there's a plan to get him well, even though it's taken way, 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 way longer than all of us would have hoped. Before we get into chit-chat across the pond, though, we have to remember Security Light this week. I was remiss last week, but I am back on my game in a big way. Adobe has been busy. 2 weeks ago, they released updates for Reader and Acrobat for Windows, Macintosh, and Unix. It closes vulnerabilities that would allow an attacker to execute arbitrary code, cause a denial of service condition, operate with escalated privileges, give you some cross-site scripting attacks, too. Yikes, that's pretty much your quadfecta right there. Well, as if that weren't enough, a few days later, they updated Flash Player for Windows, Mac, Linux, and even Solaris for the same kind of exploit possibilities. So pretty much any kind of computer you're running, any kind of Adobe software you're running, you better go run some updates. All right, not Photoshop, but pretty much everything else. Real Networks is still updating their Real Player for Windows again. Interesting, they're still working on that one. If for some reason you're still using it, run the updates, and if not, uninstall that darn thing, would you? You know how dangerous those are, even if they're just sitting there unused. Oracle released a critical patch for Java SE with 21 security fixes. I think they've been saving them up. The update is also for Windows, Solaris, and Linux, but for some reason not OS X. If Bart were here, I'd ask him why it didn't affect the Mac, but for now I'll just be ignorantly happy about it. Probably the most interesting security story this week, though, was the attack by the group known as Anonymous against security firm H.B. Gary. This is a story of intrigue, corporate espionage, sloppy security, and some good lessons for all of us to keep remembering. The only thing it seems to be missing is like a love story. So here's what happened. H.B. Gary is a security firm. They had supposedly conducted some research on the group Anonymous, which is a loosely connected group of people who stand by waiting to attack people and companies their leaders deem worthy of attack. They've grown in notoriety in their efforts to attack any company, say, that fights WikiLeaks. That's one of the ways they've gotten known recently. So here we have H.B. Gary, a company whose business is security, going after Anonymous. H.B. Gary had planned to reveal their research at a security conference in San Francisco this past week. Evidently, Anonymous got wind of it, and they decided to go on the attack to try and break into the walls of H.B. Gary. Now, one would assume that a security firm would be impenetrable, right? Well, it turns out that H.B. Gary committed every single mistake Bart has been trying to teach us not to make over the past 4 years. How many times has Bart reminded us to update WordPress when the updates come out? There's a reason for that. Content management systems like WordPress use databases, and databases can be vulnerable to a thing called SQL injection. If you use a big CMS tool like WordPress or some of the others, it's being tested and analyzed by massive numbers of people, and frequent security updates come out as a result. Well, H.B. Gary made a mistake here, and they used a little-known CMS product, which wasn't being updated, and Anonymous was able to break in because they weren't up to date. The second mistake they made was not being aware of phishing attacks using social engineering. A member of Anonymous was actually able to convince someone over the phone to lower the defenses of their firewall by pretending to be someone internal to the company H.B. Gary. This is the most insidious problem because, you know, to keep yourself from being vulnerable to this, you have to train all of your employees, remind them constantly of the dangers of social engineering. That is just like you can have the best firewalls in the world, but if somebody can call you up and go, "Hey, this is Bob. Yeah, could you just put your hole in that there firewall? That would be swell." And they open it up, you know, you're doomed. Well, finally, once they got the firewalls down, they were able to uncover passwords. And guess what? The passwords they discovered were reused, so they were able to dig deeper and deeper into more and more systems at H.B. Gary. Needless to say, this did not turn out well for H.B. Gary at all. I do hope I'm smarter and more vigilant than the people at H.B. Gary because of years of listening to Bart tell us to update WordPress, use secure passwords with tools like LastPass and 1Password, and to be ever vigilant to human requests for information they shouldn't be requesting. If you'd like to read more detail about this story, I put a link in the show notes to the article at the Register. Well, for security, that was pretty fun, but let's really have fun and finally get into chit-chat across the pond. Well, it's that time of the week again. It's time for chit-chat across the pond, and this week it is across the pond. We have Elaine Giles from the Mac Bytes podcast. How are you today, Elaine?
I'm great. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing fantastic. I'm excited. This is pretty fun to have a 300th show.
Brilliant.
Yeah. It just, you know, it flew by. It flew by. I started doing the math. I think I've written about 15,000 words. No, 150,000 words in my blog.
He's going it some.
That's quite a book. So anyway, I wanted to get you on the show because one of the things I read in your resume there is that you're a trainer, and I'm curious about training and how it's worked. I know you switched from the PC to the Mac, but maybe you still work with PCs. Just kind of wanted to get an idea of how training, computer training, has changed over the years and where you see it going and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I use a Mac now. I've switched 5 years ago, but I've been a computer trainer for longer than I care to admit, probably about 16 years.
Oh, wow.
So I started, obviously, on a PC because it was around the time there wasn't a PC on every desktop. So just at that point that there was the explosion of PC usage, and there were people there who used PCs, but they were the really technical guys. And they didn't actually like end users. And end users looked at the PCs and thought, I don't want a PC. That you couldn't convince them that they'd need it. They didn't believe it would help them in their work. So it was viewed really as more of a hindrance. So those techs concentrated on installing systems and putting a PC on every desk and maintaining it. But they didn't really actually have any experience with end user software. And certainly not people. They're not people, if you know what I mean.
Right.
So back in those days, courses were more an introduction to. So it could be DOS or a particular package or something like that. And it wasn't unusual to have, usually you get somewhere between, I prefer 6 to 8 people, but sometimes they like you to train many, many more at a time. A room full of sort of 18 is unruly. but most of them had never even touched a PC. They were having their training just at the point that it was appearing on their desk.
Oh, wow. And they didn't really know why or what they were supposed to be doing with it?
No, they had a job. And of course, they'd already been doing their job, some of them for many, many years, 20, 30 years, and never needed a PC. So that's why they saw it as a hindrance. It was around the time of maybe, you know, if you were using DOS, you went into one program and you stayed in there. So if you were in your spreadsheet, then you were doing your numbers. And then if you needed to write a letter, you know, you had to come out of it and go into a completely different package. And they were seeing that as slowing them down. There was also that aspect of people who had secretaries. Oh, and right. They liked the status of saying, take a letter. They saw this thing
coming. I did that job for a while with a dictation machine. So I've been on the other side of that.
So, of course, they were seeing it of, I'm expected to type my own letters. I'd say hardly any of them could type at all.
I actually remember many, many, many years ago where there was a kid who was he had a report due that he didn't work for me at the time, but he was a young kid and he didn't know how to type, and so he had finished writing his report by hand 2 weeks before he had to have it done because he said it would take him 2 weeks to type it. I said, you know, at that point it turns out we have a secretary and she knows how to type. You could probably ask her to do it. And he was like, oh, really? Could I? You know, it's like, no. At that point, you really want somebody doing it who can knock it out in a half an hour. You know.
Absolutely. At the time, well, actually, just before I had a career change into training, I was working as a lawyer and I was sort of pretty low down the food chain. I was in my early 20s. And the problem I had was I could type, but I didn't have access to a PC because the fee earners didn't. And the problem I had was because you're so low down the food chain, the secretaries don't want to do your typing. Now, I didn't have a problem with that, but I either need a secretary or a machine. I need one or the other, and I actually had access to neither. So I could understand this, but I give it to the secretary. But not helpful. And if you think now, can you imagine going for a job and there not being a PC on your desk? Oh, you'd be horrified.
Yeah, I actually ran a group of engineering computing people, and I remember when one of my guys came to me and said, Allison, we really need our own computers, and I thought that was stupid. I'm not a very good strategic thinker sometimes. That's certainly been proven.
There was certainly a sort of tipping point where people didn't see it anymore as, you know, I don't want it, I don't need it. It was sort of then a status symbol. I had one manager, he had a PC on his desk. Now, I will admit, I'd never seen it turned on, but I just assumed that he used it, you know, and then turned it off. When we did finally get it turned on to install some new software, it had sat on his desk for 18 months and he'd never turned it on.
Oh, my gosh. But he just thought it looked cool?
Yeah. And I thought, well, what is it there for? And he said, well, you know, got to have one, haven't I? And we knew he'd not turned it on because it was Windows 3.1.1, you know, like the first networked version of Windows. And when we turned it on, it asked to create an account. So he couldn't get away with it. Now, he tried, but I said, you know, no, this has never been turned on because look, it's asking for your name. And so he was caught red-handed. He had to admit, no, he'd never turned it on. It really was just for show. But what he used to do was he used to go out and buy new software. He had a cupboard full of new software and he had a colour printer. And I remember when I went in and he said, I've just got this. What do you think? What do you think of this? And I said, oh, it's a good model. And it just happens to be the one I've just bought. He said, oh, good, good. So I said, well, what are you going to use it for? And he said, oh, I don't know. I don't know. But one of his competitors
like
had just bought
him.
It.
Oh, my God.
His competitor had just bought one. So, of course, he had to have one.
Oh, my God. That's
and
so
he had
funny.
Them, oh, he just had cupboards full of other stuff. So we actually had to get him set up with everything. Came as quite a shock to him. And no, he couldn't type either. So back in the day, he was putting Lotus Smart Suite on it. Despite the fact
that was a Lotus 1-2-3 or any of the... That was good stuff.
Yeah, Lotus 1-2-3 was sort of the benchmark at the time, and WordPerfect as well, especially in lawyers' offices. But he'd gone for this Lotus Smart Suite, because I don't know if you remember the box, but it was incredibly pretty. It was yellow, and it really stood out on the shelf, and it had all the products, the names down the side, so it looked like a little set of books. And, of course, his competitor had bought that as well, so it came with the printer. And no, they didn't even use it in the office, so he was the only one with this suite. And he said, well, what does it do? Tell me what this does. This was when I think it was right at the interview stage. And he said, what does this do? And you know the pressure in an interview. You say, well, that's a spreadsheet, and that's a word processor, and that's a database, and that's that. Oh, right, yes, okay then. And, of course, obviously, when I'd been working for him for a few months, I thought back to the interview, and I thought, my word, you weren't asking me to judge whether I knew. You needed me to tell you. And, he admitted it in the end. But
well, yes, so if he was self-aware, that's okay.
He was aware that he needed that his staff needed PCs. That he was aware of.
Okay.
But he didn't take any excuses from them.
Oh.
There was a young lady there. She was probably about my age, early 20s. She was a trainee, and she'd concentrated on her legal education. She had never taken typing courses or never used a PC at all. And she was sort of saying, I can't type. I've never used a computer. I've never used a typewriter. I don't know what to do with this. It's ridiculous. And he had no sympathy at all. He really did lay the law down. And she was petrified. She was scared to death that she'd get sacked because she couldn't use this thing.
So was she a motivated person to teach?
I wasn't training at the time, but once he realised that there was this gap, I think he thought that you could put a PC on the desk and everyone would just use it, apart from him, obviously. And what she did was, I did start doing some training then, because he said, well, you can use the thing and you can speak to people. So, you know, you're sort of a hybrid between somebody who can actually use it and somebody who can talk to people. And I did do some training. The secretaries were very open-minded to it. They liked the fact they'd been using typewriters. So if they were using long documents like pleadings and things, court papers, they got to use the computer. And it was the computer. There was one. There was 20-odd secretaries, but just one computer, and they all had to vie for time on it. So when this system came in and they were all going to get one of their own, they were thrilled because they knew just how much time it would save them with normal documents like letters. They were really at the cutting edge then of copying and pasting, the kind of thing you do with Typinator or Text Expander now. They were copying and pasting then, creating their own systems. So they were really open to it. But this young lady, no, she wasn't. She was petrified. She was just completely terrified of touching the thing. After I left that and I started working in training, she did actually turn up on a colleague's course, and she'd paid for it herself, and she begged me not to tell anybody because she was too ashamed to tell them that she still didn't get it.
Aww.
It's a bit of a shame, but
yeah. So when did you start actually doing training?
My first training was when I was still working as a solicitor, and that was why. It was because I could bridge the legal knowledge and the computer knowledge and talk to people.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually realised that I much preferred computers and training to the law anyway.
Oh, interesting.
So I decided to, after I'd worked towards being a lawyer for 7 years, I changed career. So I left, I got requalified. Did it what I consider to be sort of the right way, you know, where you actually learn the job from the ground up, because that's what I'd done with the law. And that was probably around 1995-ish.
Okay.
And my first course was supposed to be Project, Microsoft Project. Anybody who knows me will know that I loathe Microsoft. I don't know what I was thinking agreeing to this, but that was supposed to be my first course. But then they rang me up and said, can you come in? We urgently need an introduction to PC. So it was 3 hours of DOS in the morning and an introduction to Windows in the afternoon.
So you were bridging the gap right then between DOS and Windows? Or DOS says you still needed it during Windows?
They needed little bits of it. They needed to know how to format disks at DOS level, and they were using Lotus 1-2-3 for DOS, WordPerfect for DOS.
Now, I don't know whether you realize this, but my mother uses WordPerfect on DOS today.
Nothing wrong with that at all. I loved it.
It's a 27-year-old machine. And it was hysterical. She called me a little while ago and said, Allison, I need to learn how to double space. And I'm sitting there, oh, for the love of Pete, how am I going to figure that out? But I went online and I was able to find the instructions. And it's about, I don't know, 9 different keystrokes, and you're hitting, you know, function 8, function 7, you know, all these different things. And I made a song out of it for her because it was so long. And she could write it down, but she can't read it after she writes it down. So that doesn't do any good because she's blind. So anyway, it was pretty comical. But she successfully double-spaced after learning the song.
WordPerfect was amazingly powerful for DOS. It didn't look it, and it was, like you're saying, all very hidden, deep keyboard shortcuts, but it pretty much does everything that people would need even today. I originally had an Amiga, a Commodore Amiga, and I got WordPerfect for that because I knew, at the time I was training to be a lawyer, I knew that's what they'd use in the office. And I taught myself going through, you know, older software used to come with ring binders with all the instructions. I worked through that from top to bottom. So I loved it. I really did love it. I didn't want to leave behind WordPerfect when I went to a PC. I loved it that much.
But it sounds like you do enjoy the learning process to be the one who knows the new thing.
I do. I think if something's there, then I want to know how it works. I'm one of these, I'll take it apart and see how it works and then try and put it back together and make it better types.
Okay.
So I did love that. I actually thought at the time, should I go to university to read law or should I go and do computing? And I was really torn between the two. It was sort of just the fact that the courses were there that turned me towards the law first. When I got to university, we had, it was a private college and they had very good infrastructure and they had early Apple computers in there, and you got to go in there to type up your essays and stuff. So I was in there a lot, a real lot, and I just loved it. I really did love it, and I do love learning. I can't think of anything better than sitting there and learning something new. Well, but I know that not everybody feels the same.
Well, yeah, and I you're right. You can't convince people to feel that way, but so many times, like, I look at people who are the best at a piece of software, and now something new's coming in, and for some reason it never occurs to them to think, hey, maybe if I learn it first, I'll be the best at that. Instead, so many of people just go, oh, you know, I think I'll just fight it and pretend it's never going to change and try to keep this thing from happening. And that never works out well.
Absolutely. When I'm doing classroom training, you do tend to get sort of 6 to 8 people, and you'll probably get sort of 1 or 2 that are very open-minded to it, but likewise you'll get 1 or 2 that are really, really antagonistic to it. And that's sort of where the people management comes in. You then either, I mean, I've never actually reached the stage where I've had to take somebody on one side and ask them to sort of tone it down a bit.
Shut the heck up.
I did come close once. It was the only time I think I got very, very stressed.
See, I don't know that I could do that. I would have to just go, hey, quit your whining, move on.
Oh, no, you're not allowed to do that. Absolutely not. All the people on the course happened to be from the same company, and they obviously knew what this guy was like. I personally couldn't see an alternative to what they were doing. It wasn't a case of, I've got a ballpoint pen and I intend to keep using it. It was Photoshop. And I adore Photoshop. I love everything about Photoshop. I love tinkering with pictures. So I couldn't understand that he was so antagonistic. And it was everything from the fact that he was left-handed and the mouse wasn't set up right for him to the fact he didn't like the software and he didn't like the way it did this and he didn't like the way it did that. And I thought, well, what are you going to do? Are you going to print your picture out and use some scissors and sellotape? Because that really is the alternative to what you're looking at. And I managed to sort of keep my temper all day. But in the breaks that we had, I was like, I can't get through to this guy. I can't get him to see the benefits. Everybody else is having a whale of a time. And I thought, you know, he's not going to have enjoyed the course at all. He isn't going to have taken anything away with it. And it's a shame. I'm so passionate about this product. I'm so passionate about training, and you're not taking it away. And at the end of most of these training courses, you fill in what's called a smile sheet. And you say, you know, trainer was good, bad, indifferent. This was, I enjoyed this, I didn't like that. He filled it in and he enjoyed the entire day, according to the smile sheet. Never enjoyed myself so much. And I thought, you know, he's read it wrong. He's filled them in. He's filled it in backwards.
Like he thought 5 meant 1 and 1 meant 5, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I've seen that done. So I thought, he must have done. But then he put comments at the bottom that, you know, the trainer was very good and incredibly patient, showed us some fantastic techniques.
Wow.
And I was stunned. I was blown away. And I thought, wow.
You know, you really do never know. I was our company has put in a social networking platform inside our company, and I met a guy about a year and a half ago at a dinner, and I'm all excited about, you know, and I'm yapping away about how great this thing is, and he says, yeah, you know, I don't know what we need all this crap for, you know, what do we need chat for and all that? I got a phone right here. And I looked at him and I said, yeah, we're just waiting for you people to die off, you know? Perhaps not the politically correct statement to make, but I'd had some wine. So anyway, fast forward a year, and I met him at another function, and he walks up to me and he goes, hey, guess what? I'm blogging. And he's like totally into it. So you just never know.
No, I love it when that happens, when somebody comes in and they're either very timid with the technology or very antagonistic, and you can get through to them. I love that. I really do love that, because you're changing how they approach their job. You're potentially altering their career path if you could just get through to them. So I think that's why I love it so much. I really do.
Oh, cool. So now let's fast forward a little bit. You have in the notes that Y2K was a tipping point. What changed?
It was the fact... When I was studying law in London, I was at university in London, and there was a tipping point there as well, where lots of posters sprang up on the tube and said, become a lawyer. Hmm. I'm looking at them thinking, what do you mean, become a lawyer? Have you any idea how long this takes? You know, you've got university, you've got conversion courses, you've got postgraduate courses, and then you've got your training. Become a lawyer, what? And these posters were everywhere, and I sort of laughed at them. And Y2K was the same thing. If you remember back to the world is going to stop, all the computers in the world are going to stop working.
Right.
It became one of those things that people, an opportunity to make money. And what I then saw springing up was all the lawyer posters were taken down, never mind that, and bookkeeping, and that was another popular one, become a bookkeeper. All those were taken down, and it was become an IT professional.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, that does not happen in days. But they were boot camps that were being put on, and it was become a trainer in a week. Well, I would just laugh like a hyena at them. What do you mean, become a trainer in a week? What could you learn in a week that you could possibly tell somebody about? And I think what they were concentrating on, and it wasn't just training at that stage, it was like become an IT professional in a week. I think that's insulting to any professional. Can you imagine, become a doctor in a week, a dentist? And you're going to trust these guys?
That's awesome.
And they did. They ran boot camps. Now, the thing with these boot camps were they were 5 days and they were very expensive. So they were a high revenue earner for the training companies.
So they didn't
mind how many supposed trainers, IT professionals they churned out at the end of the week.
Right.
When each one was about £3,000. They loved it.
Some of them don't care.
They guaranteed a job at the end of it. But these jobs never surfaced. So I noticed at the time that it was when it became fewer of the geeks and more people who had really never seen a PC before. And they'd probably been made redundant from other jobs, or they just fancied a career change. Because, of course, also on the posters was become a trainer in a week, become an IT professional in a week, and earn X amount of money.
Right, of course.
Which was probably 10 times what you're earning now. It was all sort of bluff and counter-bluff, but people bought into it. And I'm sure some of the people were motivated enough and to become professionals and do the extra work that it took, but there was also people who didn't. And you started to see like a sort of fragmentation then. There were the new people. Training is so much more than just I can talk to people or I know a bit about Word. You know, you've got delivery skills, you've got people management skills, you've got to analyse what they actually need. You can't tell them how to do something.
What problem are they trying to solve?
Yeah, exactly. You can't just sort of say to them, you know, this is how you do that. And they say, can you explain that in a different way? I don't understand it. You can't just say the same thing again.
Oh, I've had those professors, though, where they just say it louder. It's like, no, yep. I'm not deaf. I just don't know what you're saying. You're not making any sense.
Exactly.
And that is probably the single biggest description of a good teacher is one who can change the way they explain something. Because if they don't understand it well, they can't do that, right?
Yeah. Sometimes it's the thing that you change when you try and explain it is the last thing you think you would have to change. When you're explaining spreadsheets, people's mathematical capabilities, they're terrified of maths in this country for some reason. Mm. They are absolutely terrified. It's like, I'm doing an Excel course. I don't have to know how to add up, do I? They really are petrified. So I'm doing Excel stuff years ago, and it was I had some demo data, and the demo data was about books. So I just had some sort of, you know, three books, five books in a column. And I was showing them how to add them up and how to work out 20% on that and all that kind of thing. And this poor girl was completely lost. So I said, right, what's the problem? Yeah, where did you lose the thread of this? And she explained, you know, just not getting this at all. So I started talking to her about it. And she said, well, the thing is, we don't make books. We make spanners.
What's a spanner?
This doesn't... a wrench.
Oh,
a wrench. They,
oh, okay.
They were a company who made tools.
Okay.
So she said, well, this isn't what we do. So I said, well, what say we change books in that column for spanners and monkey wrenches? And mm-hmm. she said, ah, oh, I'm getting this now. Just changing the word
wow.
opened up her mind to it. So it is a skill all in its own right, and I don't believe that you can learn it in a week. Then, of course, came along at this point that people trying to make money out of it again, then came along certifications. You've got to be certified now. Prove that you can do what you're already doing kind of stuff. And there was the technical high-end ones. So you probably heard of MCSE stuff, MCDBA.
For everyone else, the Microsoft Certified...
Systems Engineer.
Systems Engineer, right. Yep. And there's and data, Cisco database Certified and all that.
Yep, all of that. So there was the high-end stuff, but then came end-user things as well. So stuff like Microsoft Office User Specialist.
Oh, geez, really?
Oh, yes. So
that's someone else looking to make a pound here, a pound there, right? Mm-hmm.
They were terrible. I didn't do those. I just couldn't. Oh, I couldn't. At that stage, I became MCSE certified, but I couldn't be doing with Office stuff because, to me, I'm looking to find a solution to a problem, and I'm not looking to learn how they want me to do a specific job. And that's what that certification was all about. Then came, in the UK, the Institute of Information Technology Training. And that was for trainers to join as a professional body. So that started in 1996, became a founder member of that. And the idea of that was to sort of prove that it had different membership levels. So, of course, if you'd be doing the job years, you went in at a certain level. If you were new, you went in at a different level. That was quite a good idea to sort of say that you could actually train. So I'm still a member of that all these years on. I became a fellow in 2003. And we have, like, they've kind of moved forward as well. So we've got the social networking things that you're talking about and all sort of trainers together. There was also...
Are you doing any of that kind of training?
Train the trainer training. If you're with me.
Well, yeah, I'm wondering how you do training and social networking. I've been thinking about this a lot, that it seems to me that one of the things we could really use is a class called Social Networking for Old Farts. And I would want it to be named that way so people could be, like, I've thought about, what about executives who know they're supposed to care about Twitter and Facebook, but it just sounds stupid to them? I want to teach that class, you know, to get in with a bunch of executives where it's like, it's a secret anonymous thing and nobody's allowed to tell anybody else who was in the room because they're afraid to look like idiots. I think that'd be fun to teach.
Absolutely. There are courses in social networking. They don't tend to be aimed at the end user, sadly. They tend to be aimed at other trainers and other business people who are providing a business service. And then it becomes nothing more than them going on Twitter and Facebook and sending scheduled messages. Do you know I train this? Do you know I train that? So I agree with you. I think the end users and, like you're saying, the older people as well would really benefit from that. I've noticed with executives and managers, they don't like being trained with other staff. They like one-to-ones. Yep.
Right. That's kind of what I was thinking was, but yep. If there was a way to do it where it was, you know, anonymous, you sign a thing saying you're not allowed to tell your other little executive friends that you saw me in this class or something.
Absolutely. I've done that. Like, I went in and it was a guy, he wanted to know about Excel. Well, that was what I got told. And when I got there, he didn't really want to know all about Excel. He wanted to know how he could get Excel to create reports from his company's back-end data.
Oh.
And that way he could sell it because lots of people were using Excel. So if he could interface Excel to his data, then he could sell things. So it wasn't really a one-to-one and show me how Excel works. But again, that was like, and can you come in the back door and don't let anybody know because this is top secret kind of thing. So I think that would be a really good type of course. Don't see it happening, though.
Probably not. I brought it up at UCLA. I'm on the advisory board for the extension program there for computer science. And I said, this is a class you got to teach people because those people would pay a bucket of money to go to it, too.
Mm. You know, especially if they've got anonymity.
Yeah, exactly. So where are we going into today?
It's changing. It's definitely changing. You've really got to keep your own skills up to date. I mean, unless you want to train your mum in WordPerfect, you're going to have to move on with what you know. So the new era is more separation of skills, really. So before the training even starts, you're really looking at a training needs analysis, so you actually know what sort of training is needed. It wouldn't be the first time in years gone by that you've turned up to something and it's completely different. Not just, you think it's an intro to Excel and then it's not. I went to one company and it was CorelDRAW. I had a very bad journey getting there as well, but that's a totally different story. I got there and it was right, well, you know, hello, we're looking at CorelDRAW. And I started talking to them about CorelDRAW, which is vector-based graphics, and I assumed they were making logos and artwork. And I knew they weren't with me. Even after 10 minutes, I just knew they weren't with me. So I decided on an early break and have a chat with them. And it turned out they'd bought the wrong product.
Oh, no.
What they actually wanted to do, it was a design company. They designed woolens. They had photographs that they got taken for them with sort of a certain colour of jumper on. And what they wanted to be able to do was to change the colour of the knitwear in the photos.
Oh, my gosh.
Which is really easy with Photoshop.
Right.
But they'd bought CorelDRAW. Somebody recommended that they buy CorelDRAW.
Oh, no.
So what they really needed was sort of a training needs analysis before they started, or you may also have heard of it as technical pre-sales, which is sort of talking to them about what they want to do. Now, I really like that kind of job. I like to leave them with a solution to their problem.
Right. Well, that's part of that. What problem are you trying to solve?
Exactly.
That's one of the reasons I push that so hard on the shows. You know, so many times people go, hey, this is really cool. You need it. And I go, what problem does it solve? And it's not a problem I have. It's just not going to be interesting to me, but I better know that up front.
Yep. So many times, you know, if you go in and you deliver a course in anything, it becomes just a shopping list to them and their eyes glaze over. They're not really interested unless you can link it to something that they're doing.
So like the spanners.
The better training needs analysis or technical pre-sales that happen, then the better the course will be. Back in the day, the trainer probably used to do all of that. You would talk to the people on the course. You would talk to who was booking it. You would possibly even write dedicated course materials. But again, that's separate now as well. So at the moment, I'd say it's a real separation of skills. You're separating out the training needs analysis, the technical pre-sales. There is actually a genre within training known as instructional design. And they are people who probably don't train face-to-face, but they are experts, well, hopefully they're experts, in designing course materials. So that's their skill. And there's also, of course, e-learning, on-demand learning, where it's either video-based or audio-based, or maybe on a website where you follow it through kind of thing.
So
more and more.
Another thing to think about from this angle, though, is also as someone going to get training, what questions you should be asking to make sure you understand what you're going to get out of it.
Absolutely. I think you need to know when you go in where you want to be when you've done it. Otherwise, technical pre-sales becomes nothing more than an upselling mechanism, which I must admit I don't like at all. I want to leave them with a solution. So the more you know, don't just go in and sort of be fobbed off with an intro to whatever course. You need to go in and say, this is the problem and we're looking for a solution. We're looking to either work it through in the training or give the problem to somebody, let them have a look at it and let them come back with maybe three alternatives. But that is very, very skilled. So anybody who's done the become a trainer in a week, they're probably not going to be at that level to be able to help you. And of course, there is, like you're saying, social the social side to it now as well. A lot of people are getting information from colleagues in very many different ways.
And that's a good or a bad thing, or both?
Both. It can be very, very good. If you've got somebody who's been there many years and they know exactly how the company works inside and out, then they probably know enough to know how to short circuit some of the more long-winded procedures and actually get the job done. Mm-hmm. But then there's the other side to it as well, which is, as they say, what's that saying? A lie is halfway around the world before the truth's got its boots on. So you can have a procedure. You can have a procedure which isn't good. You definitely don't want that going around the company like wildfire, and that's the one that will. You can guarantee it. If there's a bad practice way of doing it, that one will spread much quicker than the right.
You know,
way
this is one of the arguments I have for using a social networking platform for things like this. A lot of people said, "Well, we can't just have anybody just writing out answering questions for people because what if they're wrong?" And I said, "Well, right now they're wrong and they're telling people and you don't know about it. If they do it on the web, if they do it on this web interface where you can see that they're telling people wrong, you can say, hey." Gee, Sally, you know, that you're close, but it's not quite really doesn't work that way. Here's the right answer. Now, not only did she learn and stop telling everybody else, but the other people reading what she wrote learned. So you get a lot of leverage out of that where you wouldn't be able to do it if you just, had all the word of mouth and the lies traveling around the world.
Exactly. That is that's actually now got a name because, of course, you can't market something if it hasn't got a name. So that's now known as informal learning. And there's books out there on that.
there's books on informal learning.
Oh, absolutely. The one I'm thinking of, the quote I think that's across the front of it is, workers learn more in the coffee room than the classroom. Which is probably true. I like the social side of training. I think it can work very, very well. If like you're saying, if you've got, you're really creating a knowledge base, an in-house knowledge base of best practice. And of course, if you work into that, like a reward system, then people will share their knowledge. And that works very, very well. The biggest thing at the moment, I think, is virtual training. Everywhere I turn, I'm getting bombarded with learn to virtually train, become a virtual facilitator. And what they mean is it's online training. It's live online training. It is hugely, hugely different from, I'd say, every other type of training. And it is, there have been over the years, to be honest, lots of next big things. There was knowledge management, just-in-time training. Oh, that was a classic.
Knowledge management, one of my favorites.
But it was, when it becomes a buzzword and everybody's writing books on it and everybody's talking about it and nobody actually knows what it is. It's just something that we can talk about because it's a buzzword and it's big. It's the biggest, greatest, latest thing. Virtual training's at that stage right now. But virtual training is a case of forget almost everything you know about delivery and start again, because a lot of trainers who are very, very good in the classroom, they've got body language and eye contact and gestures.
Sure.
You don't have that. You're going to have to put far more emphasis on your voice. Your ability to multitask will be stretched beyond endurance because you will have to talk at the same time as you're demonstrating software or a technique or a workflow. You're going to have to keep your eye on the chat somehow. You're going to have to manage the delivery system. You will have something running on your machine like Adobe Acrobat Connect or WebEx. You're going to have to make sure that's still working okay. You're going to have to watch for technical issues. So as a trainer, you could get away with in a classroom actually being fairly technically incompetent. But online, virtually training, no, you're going to have to be very technically competent.
That sounds like a day in my life on the live show on Sunday nights.
Well, it takes nerve, doesn't it? You're going to know that then.
Right.
So really with that, sometimes in a classroom situation, you're talking them through something. Years ago, I remember I used to know where every button was, and I'd say it's third from the right, it's second from the left, without even looking, because I knew. And we weren't at the time at the position where the trainer had their own machine and there was a projector and you could all demonstrate it. You were walking around and you were watching what they were doing and you were talking them through it. Virtually training, you're probably going to show them. You'll probably demonstrate it. So it is very, very, very different, and sometimes very, very difficult.
I'm glad you brought that up, though, about the second from the left thing. One of the things I wanted to say when you were talking about being flexible in your explanation, and I have only learned this really, really recently, maybe in the last 2 years. My friend Niraj and I worked together on a lot of different efforts, and we realized that he and I describe things on the computer completely differently, and different people would understand us. I always do the coordinates. I'll say, you know, it's practically Cartesian, you know, in the upper left third, or, you know, bottom right quarter, that sort of thing. And he always gives you color and shape. So he'll say the orange box. I would never say the orange box. I might say the orange box that's one third of the way down the page or something like that. But I would start with its coordinates. And I think what I need to learn is to start, if I tell someone it's in the upper left corner and they go, that's when you say the orange box. And or the shape, or the, you know, something visual about it is something ways some people are going to learn. Because if I ever had to teach Niraj something, he'd never know what I was talking about, because he just doesn't think that way.
Good thinking. Be aware, so many people have color blindness issues, and they see colors a totally different way. I have in Photoshop classes been talking about choose the orange palette and find out that, you know, somebody's chosen purple. And I'm thinking, did I not make that clear? And then I realized another thing is the left and right mouse options. I've started to say, well, years ago, I thought, how am I going to do this? You can't keep saying the left mouse button, the right mouse button, or the other way around if you've, you know, reprogrammed the mouse. And I started saying the primary mouse button and the secondary mouse button.
Oh, that's a good idea. I had trouble teaching somebody virtually, and I can't remember which way it was, but I was screen sharing with them, and I could not get them to move their mouse into the upper left-hand quadrant. And we finally figured out, my son walked in, and it was either she was using a mouse pad, the trackpad, and I thought she had a mouse, or vice versa, I forget which, but it was the one thing I couldn't see in a virtual environment. She didn't have a mouse at all, was what was going on. So I kept telling her to click the right mouse button, and she's just completely baffled what I'm trying to tell her to do.
That reminds me of one of my very early times. I was training somebody, and she had a problem. This was way back in the day. The operating system ran off 5 1/4 inch floppies. It was that long ago. And what was happening, and she could repeat this thing, she could repeat it at will. She would boot the machine, she would sit there, wait for it to come on, and despite the fact these discs were absolutely fine, the discs would just erase themselves. And neither me or her technical person involved with it could work out what she was doing. So I sat and I watched her, and I checked that the machine and everything was fine. And what she was doing was, she actually had the mouse upside down. And her logic was, well, the tail comes out the bottom, surely.
You know, a lot of people thought that early on.
And she was pressing the wrong button, and then trying, then immediately realizing it was the wrong button, pressing the right one. And who knew? It was a hack. If you press them in that order, it wiped the discs. That one took a couple of weeks to find out.
Oh, my gosh. I had one with my father-in-law, and this was my bad. He was having trouble with his Linksys router, and he called me up, and he said, you know, I can't connect to it, whatever. And I realized that he had had a power outage, and he needed to reset things. So I said, okay, pull out the black notebook that's in the left drawer of your desk, turn to page 4 in the manual that I wrote for you with screen steps. So he brings it out, and he says, okay, I'll try to do it on my own. So, you know, he spends a couple hours, and he says, it keeps happening. It keeps getting reset, and he can't figure it out. And I had neglected the very last step. I had forgotten to tell him to push save, and the last button he saw was reset. So he would go through and put all these configuration changes in to get his password and rename the network and everything. And the last button he'd do is reset it to factory settings. That took a couple of weeks.
It's easily done, isn't it?
Yeah. And if you're sitting right there, you'd go, no, 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 no.
Oh, dear.
Well, this has been really fun. Do you have any more you want to tell us about where you think the future is going? We're just about out of time.
I think in the future what you'll find is that the capabilities of personal tech are going to far exceed what corporations are providing. So people are going to get actually more frustrated. They've got smartphones, iPads, MiFis. They're going to feel fenced in at work. So I'd say if you want to learn more about that, have a look at a site. I think it's hackingwork.com, and there's a book as well, Hacking Work. And that gives you some great ideas for your own personal development. I'd say go that route. I'm really enjoying that.
That sounds like a dangerous book to read.
Yeah, it doesn't. Well, I'm a maverick, so I've been doing that for years. You know, I've been going my own way for years. It's really about doing your own thing, getting your own kit, and breaking rules to get the job done, but not to the point that you get sacked. Just that you get the rewards that you so richly deserve.
But what about corporate security?
Never mind corporate security. The corporations.
Okay, I'm putting my hands over my ears. La, 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 la. I can't hear you. Well, look at the time. We have to go now.
I take it you work in the security department then.
No, I don't. I just know people who do. And I don't even think Bart will let us keep talking if we keep going down this line.
No, let's not go down that line. I'm not talking to those levels, but I'm saying get the job done. Do whatever it takes to get the job done.
I gotcha. Well, this has just been so fun, Elaine. I cannot believe 40 minutes has gone by. I could talk to you for another couple hours.
Me too.
So
stop recording and do that.
There you go. Maybe we can do this again sometime.
Absolutely.
All right. Look forward to it. In the meantime, where can people find you?
You can find me at elainegiles.co.uk, which is my blog. You can also find me at macbytes.co.uk, which is my podcast. And my latest project is Slide IQ, which is one of my most popular courses at the moment, is effective presentations. And what I'm doing is I'm showing people, there's so many people telling you what not to do with your presentations. You don't need bullet points, you don't need clip art, you don't need this, you don't need that. And I want to say, fine, we know all that, but what do I need? So that's what I'm working on at the moment. I want to show you how to improve presentations.
Oh, fantastic. That sounds really fun. I'll definitely check that out. What was that URL again?
SlideIQ.com or slide-iq.com, but they both go to the same place.
Okay, great. All right, I really appreciate the time, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Absolutely. Been great fun.
Well, that's going to wind us up for this week. So much great thanks to everyone who contributed to the show. I love your well wishes. Absolutely could not have done this without you, especially Steve. And I just thank you so much for sending in all the comments. And we did get comments and email too. And it was just fantastic. I had a great time. I had sparkling cider. I had cake. There were balloons, excitement. We had a great time in the live chat too. So that's going to have to wind us up though. Many thanks to our sponsors for helping to pay the bills, ScreenSteps, Smile, and of course, Honda Bob. Don't forget to send in your dumb questions, comments, and suggestions by emailing them to me at allison@podfeet.com. Follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/podfeet. And if you want to join the fun in the live show, I'm telling you, it is a blast in here. Head on over to podfeet.com/live on Sunday nights at 5 p.m. Pacific time. Thanks for listening and stay subscribed.